Whether you're walking barefoot in the snow, escaping for a walk on your lunch break, or trekking halfway across the world for a lush view, it feels good when we unplug and connect to our simpler side. If only our everyday nutrition were that simple. It's time to simplify your wellness routine with Ka'Chava. Getting the nutrition we need from that graveyard of supplements in our cupboards is often overcomplicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, keep it simple with just 2 scoops that have the highest quality ingredients. Simplify your nutrition at ka'chava.com and use code NEWS. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st. That's ka'chava, ka'chava.com, code NEWS. From walking barefoot in the snow to hiking for miles for a view, it feels good to connect with our simpler side. Simplifying your wellness with Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake feels good too. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st when they go to Ka'Chava, ka'chava.com, and use code NEWS.
Welcome back to That's Politics, and today I'm going to break down media literacy. I chose this topic today because recently I had a conversation with one of my close friends, and we talked about if the news lies to us and where the line is drawn between outright lies and framing the truth in a certain way to push a specific agenda. I think it is important to be able to understand the rhetoric you see used when someone is talking about a very controversial topic and being able to discern when someone is trying to push a message on you. Last episode, I talked about the Great Replacement Theory and how I see so many people using that specific rhetoric to rationalize their beliefs, even if it is something that was created by white supremacists. People who adopt this rhetoric don't understand the origins of the things that they are saying, and in turn, their message ends up not coming across the way they wish it did. So I think the best place to start is with media literacy. So bust out your notebooks and settle in for what I will describe as a crash course to high school English and how we were wrong for giving our English teachers so much crap. I'm your host, Mackenzie Atkinson, and let's get started. Let's start off with defining what media literacy is. The National Association for Media Literacy Education defines it as, quote, the ability to access, analyze, evaluate, create, and act using all forms of communication, unquote. This is more than being able to read or write, but it is understanding and critically thinking about what you and others write. Media literacy is an umbrella term that includes critical media literacy, which is an inquiry-based practice that focuses on critically examining structures, systems, ideologies, representations, and power; digital literacy, which focuses on knowledge, skills, and attitudes necessary to understand how digital tools interact with and impact society; information literacy, which are skills supporting the ability to discern when information is needed, including the ability to find, analyze, evaluate, use, and reflect on the needed information; and finally, news literacy, which is the ability to determine the credibility of news by understanding and recognizing the standards, practices, and ethics of professional journalism. We'll dive into this more in depth later in today's episode. We consume and are confronted with different types of media pretty much every waking moment of our lives. It is important to have an understanding of what we are seeing, why we are seeing it, and the motive behind why it is being shown to us. And media literacy is being taught at the K-12 education levels. My generation has always had information at our fingertips, and the education system has adapted to that and begun teaching us how to navigate the online world, ensuring that we have critical thinking skills. The National Association of State Boards of Education has set forth some guidelines for educators and how they should approach teaching media literacy. They break it down into 3 main areas. 1, being safety and civility. They believe that young people must be taught how to manage their own online presence and be able to identify and avoid risky behavior online and be able to interact with others safely and respectfully. This is the whole concept behind teaching people about their digital footprint and being aware of scams and teaching them how to engage with discourse online in a respectful manner. Number two is information analysis. Students should be able to identify and assess the sources and purposes of online information by being able to pick out disinformation, bias, and propaganda, which I'll get into later. But they aim to teach students how information circulates online so that they can make sense of themselves, their communities, and historical and contemporary issues. Three is civic voice and engagement. They believe that students need to understand and develop their ability to express their informed opinions on social issues and be able to engage in civic and political life before they turn 18. Now that news and political life has shifted to online media, students need a new set of skills to be able to navigate political online discourse. Now, this has me thinking about my high school education and what that looked like. For reference, I graduated high school in 2021, so I started my freshman year in August of 2017. My English classes taught me about determining the purpose of a piece of text, the audience, what rhetorical strategies they may use in the text to establish trustworthiness, and things of that nature. Now, I've noticed I've used the term rhetoric a few times in my episodes, so for the sake of clarification, I'll also define that. In general, it is the ability to communicate and specifically persuade effectively. I remember having the three persuasive rhetorical strategies drilled into my very young mind all throughout high school. That's your ethos, logos, and pathos. I know some of us have been out of high school for a while, like myself. So again, for the sake of clarification, we'll do a quick refresher on the three. Ethos appeals to someone's ethics, logos appeals to someone's logic, and pathos appeals to emotions. All of these things have to do with persuading you to do something, whether that is believing what we are saying or feeling compelled or motivated to do something physical, like, I don't know, donating 25 cents a day to the ASPCA because of those really sad dog commercials. I was taught about these things in high school, but never knew how they were directly trying to impact me. They only were teaching me how to identify them, and I never felt a connection to it. I was never able to pick out examples in my daily life. My high school was teaching me to memorize it rather than understand it. I kind of hated my English classes. I thought they were just an excuse to read and that they, most of the time, were a waste of time. Of course, as we age, we grow to understand the needs for things we did in school that we didn't understand when we were in the process of becoming young adults. I always heard, and sometimes was the one to say, when am I ever going to use this in the real world? While in high school. And I deeply apologize to all English teachers across the US for having to endure that phrase for a living. It wasn't until college that I really started to understand how rhetoric plays a key role in our reaction to media we see, and how to think critically about the content I was seeing. Later in the episode, I'm going to talk about lateral reading, so stick around for that. But I also started to understand how the news worked, and that helped with my comprehension of the news I was seeing. So let me give you a little breakdown of the news as a business so you too can get a better grasp on media literacy. The news business model is based on ad revenue. News outlets make money by selling ad space on their websites, in their physical papers, or during commercial breaks during a live broadcast. You have probably heard some ads while listening to my podcast, and I do earn some ad revenue for every ad that plays during my episodes. News outlets can charge more for ad space the more eyes they have on their content. As of right now, I only have a few eyes on my episodes, so as of right now, I am making pennies. But in comparison, say like the Super Bowl, which has millions of eyes watching, they can charge millions of dollars for ads during their commercial breaks. But people only pay attention to sensationalized content and news content that is presented in a manner that prioritizes sensationalism over professionalism is called yellow journalism. This is the type of news publication that came about in the late 19th century when William Randolph Hearst and Joseph Pulitzer competed for the eyes of New York citizens and published sensationalized and sometimes completely fabricated content to get more people to buy their papers and thus get more advertisers. And this is what the journalism business model looks like today. Social media has just fueled this news model. Think about what content catches your eye specifically. Is it normally something that's crazy or eye-catching within the first few seconds, or is it like a unbelievable headline? The crazier the intro, the more likely you are to stick around and watch. And we encounter crazy headlines every day.
Whether you're walking barefoot in the snow, escaping for a walk on your lunch break, or trekking halfway across the world for a lush view, it feels good when we unplug and connect to our simpler side. If only our everyday nutrition were that simple. It's time to simplify your wellness routine with Ka'Chava. Getting the nutrition we need from that graveyard of supplements in our cupboards is often overcomplicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, keep it simple with just 2 scoops that have the highest quality ingredients. Simplify your nutrition at ka'chava.com and use code NEWS. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st. That's ka'chava, ka'chava.com, code NEWS.
Day. Which leads me into talking about where we use media literacy skills in our day-to-day life. The most obvious one being in the news. This is specifically called news literacy, as I mentioned earlier. And there are 3 sections that we want to specifically look at. 1 is being able to pick out the bias in the source. 2 is being able to pick out the factuality and thus the trustworthiness of a source. And 3, how to share news responsibly. So let's go through each of these one by one. Let's start off with being able to pick out the bias in a source. We have to be able to understand framing theory when we talk about picking out the bias in a source. Framing theory is defined as media focusing attention on certain events, then placing them within a certain field of meaning. This theory suggests that the way information is presented or the frame it is presented through influences how people will process and make judgments about that information. The media has a way to tell you what to think about and also how to think about it. So when you look at a news article, you can identify some of the biases by understanding the way a story is being framed. Headlines are the easiest and best example of the text that can be analyzed using media and news literacy to identify biases and framing. Typically, you'll see words and headlines that are meant to grab your attention and get you to click on the story or the video. It is a business, and at the end of the day, they do not get paid unless people are watching or paying attention to their content. Headlines are also meant to give a quick summary of the story without many details, but for the sake of this conversation, we'll be focusing on the word choices to grab the attention of the audience. Let's look at an example of this. Think of it like an exercise. I'm going to read you 3 different headlines about the same story, and I want you to listen to the word choices of each headline and figure out if it's right-leaning, left-leaning, or unbiased. All right, let's start. Headline number 1, Israel begins wave of attacks to seize Gaza. Headline number 2, Israel declares Gaza's largest city a combat zone as the bodies of 2 hostages are removed. Headline number 3, Israeli tanks push deeper into Gaza City as Trump talks peace. Let me reread those for you. Headline number 1, Israel begins wave of attacks to seize Gaza. Headline number 2, Israel declares Gaza's largest city a combat zone as the bodies of 2 hostages are recovered. And headline number 3, Israeli tanks push deeper into Gaza City as Trump talks peace. You got your answers locked in? All right. The first headline, Israel begins wave of attacks to seize Gaza, was published by Today, which is a left-leaning source. Headline number 2, Israel declares Gaza's largest city a combat zone as the bodies of 2 hostages are recovered, was published by Newsmax, which is a right-leaning source. And number 3, Israeli tanks push deeper into Gaza City as Trump talks peace, came from Reuters, which is a center source. I'm going to give you another set of headlines. I think this one should be pretty easy, so let's get started with this one. Headline number 1. Pete Hegseth acts as Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services, citing divisive agenda. Headline number 2, Pentagon disbands panel on military women, alleging divisive feminist agenda. Headline number 3, Hegseth Shatter's group that encourages women in the military as part of anti-DEI push. Let me reread those for you. Headline number one, Pete Hegseth acts as Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services, citing divisive agenda. Headline number two, Pentagon disbands panel on military women, alleging divisive feminist agenda. And headline number three, Hegseth shutters group that encourages women in the military as part of anti-DEI push. Got your answers locked in yet? I'll give you a second. Here is the answer key. Headline number one, Pete Hegseth acts as Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services, citing divisive agenda. That was published by Fox News, which is a right-leaning source. Headline number two, Pentagon disbands panel on military women, alleged divisive feminist agenda, was again published by Reuters, which is our center source. And number three, Hegseth shutters group that encourages women in the military as part of anti-DEI push, that one was published by The Independent, which is a left-leaning source. I want to know how many headlines you were able to pick the bias out of. Genuinely curious. But each set of headlines told the same story, even though they were phrased differently. Let's look at the Gaza ones again. Out of all of these, we can gather that there were more attacks on Gaza City, but there are other details included in some of the headlines that push a specific agenda. The Today headline included the word seize to push the story that Israel is conquering Gaza and trying to take over. They are seizing Gaza, which has a very negative connotation to it. The Newsmax headline included details about hostages being killed and their bodies being recovered. This is meant to push the reasoning behind Israel's attacks on Gaza, that they are fighting a terrorist group and trying to save hostages. The Reuters headline is straight to the point and does include details about there being another push into Gaza, and they also include Trump in the headline. That could be to include more context because Trump has been talking about finding a peaceful solution to the war in Gaza, but that could also be about search engine optimization, which is a whole other technical side of journalism that I'm not getting into right now. But let's look at the Committee on Women in the Military being disbanded. Out of these set of headlines, we can gather that there was a committee about women in the military and that the Pentagon and Secretary Hegseth has disbanded this committee because of feminist ideology. That is the general story. The Independent headline brings up DEI, specifically anti-DEI, to push left-leaning beliefs that DEI is a good thing and that this recent disbanding of the committee is an attack on inclusivity. The Fox News headline uses the term axes as a way to portray this action as tough on woke ideology and feminist agenda, but they do omit the term feminist or feminism. Picking out the bias is not just about what they include, but what they also choose to exclude from the headline. The Reuters headline includes the term feminist in the headline, but they have the same wording as the Fox News headline calling it a divisive agenda, because that is what Hegseth gave as the reasoning for the decision. Being able to see or hear the words used in a headline and being able to discern what that outlet's purpose and or motivation for the following article is just the tip of the iceberg. If you're reading an article or reading something on your social media, you'll be able to pick out specific words they are using to try and get a reaction out of you. Being able to pick out the bias in a news source is about as simple as it gets. But with the rise of algorithmic social media, we have to be able to understand our own biases. I took a video social media class in my last semester of college, and we talked a lot about algorithms. More people now than ever have been getting their news from social media. And algorithms are designed to get engagement from you. It is a specifically curated feed for you. So it will push your own biases to you, and you, as a consumer of information, need to be able to see your own biases and know what you are seeing is contributing to your own confirmation bias. For those that don't know, confirmation bias is only seeking out information about topics that confirm your biases rather than challenging them. Algorithms contribute to your own biases without much effort. You press like and they continue to push more of that content toward you. If you think everything you see on an algorithm is the full truth, then you're walking around with blinders on and are not using your media literacy skills. But at the end of the day, it's all about trusting the content that you see, which gets us into the trustworthiness of our sources. With a vast amount of information being at your fingertips at all times, discerning which sources are trustworthy can be difficult. Harvard has provided some guidelines for evaluating sources. These are targeted towards students when they're completing their assignments or writing a paper. But there is something we as non-students can take away from this and adapt it to our daily life. They break down their evaluation guidelines by type of source. I'll cover the general guidelines and then specifically evaluating online media content. Let's start off with the general guidelines. First, you determine what the author's credentials are. This is that ethos appeal that we were talking about earlier. What educational background do they have to publish this content? You look at the author's academic or institutional affiliation. Who do they work for? What does that institution they work for aim to do? We talked about the Center for Immigration Studies a few episodes ago and how their analysis of immigration statistics might be swayed because of their anti-immigrant motives. This is the same thing. You also have to look at if the author has published something similar to the subject matter before. Have they worked on this for a while? Is this their field of expertise? Next, we look into the purpose of a source. What has motivated the publication of a source? Is it a personal message or an academic one backed by other major sources or data? Circling back to what the organization or institution aims to do, you can always look at an organization message and what they're motivated by just by looking at their about page on their website. The Harvard website provides this example. Quote, a summary of an issue written by an author who works for an organization with a known political viewpoint on that issue might be quite different from a summary of that same issue published by an academic who researches the issue. Unquote. This example is what we see in our everyday politics. You have talking heads pushing a specific rhetoric, and on the other hand, you have academics who have dedicated their entire life's work to understanding a specific issue saying another thing. You also want to determine the scope of the source. What is included in the coverage of a topic? Is it relevant to the topic? Do they provide background on the issue? Does the source provide enough background on the issue, or will you have to look at other sources? You normally can find the scope of a source in an abstract of a scholarly article or in the introduction of a book, but this is not as easy to do with the online news sources. Next, you identify who published the source. Is it published by a news outlet? Is it a peer-reviewed journal? Does the publication have a financial stake in the issue? Let's look at the GEO group that we talked about last episode. You wouldn't completely trust their information about immigration because they have a financial stake in the detention of immigrants. When it comes to social media posts, think about who posted the video. I see a lot of content on my For You page on TikTok from the official Democrats TikTok page. I wouldn't trust anything they post as completely factual because, well, duh, they're a political party. They have a stake in people believing it. The last general guideline is to determine when the source was published and if it is still relevant today. You want things that are up to date. Information is always changing, and especially during court cases or active investigations. Back in the days of COVID, during my first semester in college, I had a former friend post inaccurate and out-of-date information about if the COVID vaccines were approved by the CDC. When she posted it, claiming that the vaccines were not CDC approved, the vaccines had been approved for about a week, but she was spreading outdated information. The rule of thumb, when it comes to academic studies, is 5 years. If it's older than 5 years, then there is probably new information that has been updated. But in breaking news situations, it is good to look at official releases and stay up to date on new information that comes out. Now let's switch gears and specifically look at online media content. The Harvard website doesn't provide a specific set of guidelines when it comes to evaluating media content, but they do give some brief recommendations. They point out that there are many self-proclaimed experts on social media, which is very true, especially when it comes to the health and wellness side of social media, where there is a new fad diet every few months. But they suggest to look into the self-proclaimed experts and check their credentials like you would an author, see the sources that they use for their information, see how they are funding their content, and how current their content is. Let's look at this podcast, for example. For many of you, I'm just a voice from your phone telling you about politics. You could Google my name and see my other social media accounts. You'll find this podcast and you'll even find my professional website. From there, you can see my expertise in journalism and my degrees. I mean, you can literally see a copy of my resume. And if you are questioning the content that I put on here, I always cite my sources in the blog posts for the episode, which is standard for most podcasts. You can also analyze how frequently I post content. I post every 2 weeks, so there's probably something that has happened since those episodes were created that may not have been included in the episode. Trustworthiness is all about vetting the sources for where they get their information and why they publish that information. The next step is sharing information responsibly. Distributing misinformation, disinformation, and propaganda is easier now more than ever. But let's define these words that we see so often. Let's start off with propaganda. It is defined as information used to promote a particular point of view, change behavior, or motivate actions. Sometimes that information is facts and ideas. Sometimes it's opinions or intentionally misleading or biased. There is some unpacking we need to do real quick. Propaganda is not inherently bad, but it is something that is often utilized by bad actors. World War II is where we saw the peak of propaganda. The Nazis, the baddest of actors, were notorious for pushing anti-Semitic propaganda. An example of Nazi propaganda comes from the U.S. Holocaust Museum, where a poster depicts a stereotypical Jewish man behind a curtain made of the flags of the Allied forces. And the caption on this poster reads, quote, "Behind the enemy powers, the Jew," unquote. And this was meant to push anti-Semitic views and build up hate within the German citizenry. But the U.S. had their own propaganda. You know, Uncle Sam, Rosie the Riveter? This is a form of propaganda that was meant to build up support for the war in Europe. It called upon the citizens to do their part in supporting the war efforts, whether that be enlisting in the armed forces or joining the workforce to build military equipment. The negative type of propaganda, like the Nazi example, was based on disinformation. Disinformation is used to confuse and distract the intended audience by using deliberately false or misleading information. This is very purposeful and malicious. It is meant to whip up a smokescreen and disperse the attention of people, and it can be used to excuse bad behavior. We just talked about ICE and immigrant criminality last episode. They are pushing disinformation about how many immigrants are criminals as a way to excuse their persecution of the Hispanic community. We can also talk about the Trump administration pushing things into the news cycle to avoid the conversation around releasing the Epstein files and if he is in them. Disinformation's little sibling is misinformation. This is the distribution of unintentionally inaccurate information or accidents or mistakes in reporting. Normally, it is done during breaking news situations, and corrections will be made later on. In the wake of Hurricane Helene, there was misinformation spreading like wildfire. The craziest claim that I heard was that Chimney Rock was being bulldozed and taken over by the U.S. government for nefarious reasons. When the people enduring a tragedy cannot get information out, like in the case of Hurricane Helene, when we had no way of contacting people outside of Western Carolina, other people filled in the gaps in reporting with speculation, and that gets handed off as factual information when it could be further from the truth. This especially happens now with the news spreading quickly online and through social media because anyone can post anything and pass it off as fact. Everyone is able to spread propaganda, disinformation, and misinformation, and social media makes all of it accessible to everyone to fall for. So we as members of our society have to be able to spread information responsibly.
From walking barefoot in the snow to hiking for miles for a view, it feels good to connect with our simpler side. Simplifying your wellness with Kachava's all-in-one nutrition shake feels good too. With 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and more. No fillers, no nonsense, just the highest quality ingredients. New customers get $20 off an order of 2 bags or more now through January 31st when they go to Kachava, KACHAVA.com, and use code NEWS.
But are we in a media literacy crisis? We've already briefly touched on how media literacy was being taught in K-12 education back in my day, but let's take a look at how media literate kids are today. In 2023, the U.S. Surgeon General's advisory recognized and emphasized the need to, quote-unquote, support the development, implementation, and evaluation of digital and media literacy curricula in schools and within academic standards. But even then, only 28 states, as of 2 years ago, include media literacy language in education policy, which could range from comprehensive education in K-12 or teachers receiving media literacy training. Of the 28 states, only 7, including California, Delaware, Florida, New Jersey, Ohio, Texas, and Washington, have been designated to have taken, quote, significant steps in comprehensive media literacy education through the legislative process, unquote, according to Media Literacy Now. There are challenges to teaching media literacy in today's education system. Of the respondents of the 2023 NAMLE study, 31% of respondents said that competing curricular requirements were inhibiting media literacy lessons, 27% said they did not have enough time to teach the concept, and 13% said that they lacked the understanding of media literacy to teach it. We're starting to make changes, but how media literate are adults? Media Literacy Now conducted a survey asking adults if they were taught about science literacy and critical thinking. They conducted a survey by asking the question, in high school, were you taught how to analyze science news stories, such as news about the environment or health claims, for bias and credibility, whether in print or online newspapers or TV? They found that only 42% reported learning to analyze news stories. They also found that those who reported learning to analyze science news stories were less inclined to believe discredited conspiracy theories. In the same survey, they were also asked if they were able to reflect on media messages and how they affect people's thoughts, beliefs, feelings, or actions, and they found that 62% of adults surveyed did not have an opportunity to reflect on media messaging. I bring up adult media literacy because we, as adults, are the ones making the decisions today, and we are actively changing the world. We are actively setting up the next generation. We need to be able to understand the information and the media that is motivating our actions and the changes we seek. And this leads us into people questioning facts. Most of the time, people do not believe the things they see on their media. According to a Pew Research Center study published on September 2nd of this year, they found that there is still some trust in the media, but only from specific sources. They split up into two groups. Group one is U.S. adults who have a lot of trust or some trust in the information from national news organizations. And group two is U.S. adults who have not too much or no trust in information from national news organizations. Group one trusted ABC, NBC, and CBS News the most. Group two trusted Fox News, The Joe Rogan Experience, and PBS the most, with Newsmax and ABC News tying for fourth place among group two. They further break down these groups by partisanship. Republicans who have trust in the national media trust Fox News, ABC, and NBC. The Republicans who don't have trust in the media trust Fox News, The Joe Rogan Experience, and Newsmax. Democrats who trust the national media trust ABC, NBC, and CNN. And those who don't trust the national media trust PBS, ABC, and then there is a tie for third place between NBC and CNN for this group. But this survey was about national media trust, and I think that social media content has sowed distrust in national media for the right-wing group. I've seen some of my dad's Facebook content, and he tends to have a video playing whenever he's lounging around the house, but I'm hearing a lot of anti-establishment rhetoric about the news media. And I think that leads to distrust in the media in general. And social media has made this issue so much more prevalent. We've already covered this, but I want to reiterate, information travels so fast because of social media. Clicking the share button is such a quick action that most people do not think about it before they actually share content. I remember a few years ago, my dad showed me a video of a guy pushing a conspiracy theory. In the video, he asked his Alexa device what happened to Joe Biden on a specific date. Alexa responded by saying that Biden had died. My dad thought it was this crazy conspiracy theory, that the government was trying to cover up the death of the sitting president. I had to then explain to my dad that on Alexa devices, you can program them to respond a specific way to a prompt. My dad did not have the technological literacy to understand that you can make technology pretty much do anything you want it to do. You can even use it to push misinformation, disinformation, and propaganda. AI has made this even more of a problem. Recently, Trump has used AI on his Truth Social account to pass off information as a real thing. We can look at the fake MedBed news package that he posted. It was completely AI generated and it was pushing a QAnon conspiracy theory. It had a Fox News logo. It looked like a real news package with an anchor and what looked to be a press conference with Trump in the Oval Office. In the AI video, he was promoting the MedBed conspiracy, which is the theory that the government is hiding an advanced healing technology that can treat any illness. But it was all fake. Some people might even think that that was real because AI is getting very good at impersonating real people. This video has since been taken down. But the MedBed video wasn't the only thing Trump posted on his Truth Social this weekend that used AI. He also posted a deepfake video, which is still up as of this recording, of Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and Representative Hakeem Jeffries. In the video, the fake Schumer is talking about how no one likes Democrats anymore, and Jeffries has a photoshopped sombrero and mustache. It is obviously racist, but that didn't stop Trump from posting another video mocking Jeffries when he made an appearance on MSNBC talking about the deepfake video. But in this one, it has deepfakes of Trump in the background with sombreros as a mariachi band, and of course, added the sombrero and mustache back onto Jeffries. You can only imagine what the comments looked like on these posts, but AI is being used to push disinformation and propaganda. It is being pushed on Trump's social media platform by Trump himself. But there is hope for media literacy, which gets me into lateral reading. See, I told you I'd talk about it. But this is a concept that I was taught my freshman year of college in my American Politics 101 class. Shout out Dr. Jessica Hayden, you're an angel. And this is the concept of lateral reading. It is the practice of looking at a wide range of sources when you're educating yourself on a topic. We've talked about how different sources cover a topic in a wide range of ways depending on their political lean. Each story is a snapshot of an event. To get the full picture, you need to look at multiple sources across the political spectrum. Think back to the headline quiz that we did. It is valuable to be able to read all these stories. One thing my friend asked me in our conversation that inspired this episode was, how can you tell the difference between framing and outright lies? My answer to that is to see what and how others are reporting on an issue. Each story has truth in it. If it didn't, then it wouldn't have been published by the editorial boards of those publications. And if it is an outright lie, then it's not a reliable source. But how can you identify misinformation and disinformation? We talked about the difference between the two. Disinformation is spreading intentionally wrong content. Misinformation is spreading it unintentionally. This happens most often during breaking news situations. The best and most recent example I can think of is the identity of the alleged shooter of Charlie Kirk. I remember when the news first broke, like within the first 30 minutes to an hour after the headlines hit, people were already saying that they had the shooter in custody, but that was not the case. There was such a rush to get information out about this heinous attack that they sent out and spread wrong information. So in breaking news situations, think before you post your perspective or share a news article, because things will change in the hours and days after. Now, I'm not saying don't talk about breaking news. Just be mindful of how your post may be viewed by others and how some people might take what you post as the truth, when in reality, there is more to an evolving story. But the practices of identifying and combating mis and disinformation are the same. Mike Caulfield, a digital media literacy expert, pioneered a technique for identifying misinformation called SIFT. S stands for stop. Just like I mentioned a second ago, stop and think about the post that you just saw. Don't share it or comment on it just yet. I stands for investigate the source. Who posted this? What might their motive be? What is their political affiliation? F stands for find better coverage. Use lateral reading skills to find other sources covering this topic and see what they are saying about it. T is for trace the claim to its original context. Normally, a reputable source will link to other reports about a topic. Follow those links. see who reported on it first, and see if you can find the original social media post. This is pretty much everything I've been talking about wrapped up into a nice little acronym. But we are having to learn this a little too late in our lives. And this is where teaching young people about media literacy comes into play. We need to have media literacy curriculums in every school district across the country. I know this upcoming generation of kids has spent their whole lives on social media and have more experience than any of us. And I'm Gen Z. I grew up with social media, but Gen Alpha was born into it. This generation's baby photos have Snapchat filters on them. They know how the technology works more than we do at this point. But do they understand the risks of it? Are they able to critically think about the content they are seeing? Do they have the attention span to think critically about it? I think media literacy lessons would be beneficial in English classes and in social studies classes. English classes, because, duh, that's where you learn how to read and think critically. And social studies classes, because it takes those critical thinking skills and applies them to cultural situations that these kids might have experience with. I also think that teaching kids about media literacy in social studies classes might help them confront their own biases so they know where they stand before they reach a voting booth. But confronting our own biases isn't something that our kids should be doing. It's something that we should be doing as well. I didn't start to get a grasp on my own biases and how they motivate me and dictate what I do until I got into college. Trust, I had biases in high school, but I didn't understand them and I was willing to die on the various hills that I planted my flag on. It wasn't until I understood my own biases that I was able to see how they shape the way I think and how I carry on conversations. If you're able to think critically about yourself and the way you think and act, then you can start to think critically about the world around you. And I think if people understood themselves and their biases better, we would be a more compromising society and we wouldn't have the polarization that we have today. If you don't confront your biases, then you always think you're right. And I have all the experience and researching and reporting, and even I don't get everything right all the time, and I know this. And knowing you can be wrong and you are motivated by biases is just the beginning of healing. We need media literacy so that we can understand and be aware of the things people are trying to persuade us to believe. We need media literacy so we can navigate the world better. We need media literacy to start having open conversations again. And that is all I have for you today. Thank you for tuning into That's Politics, where we talked about media literacy, how the news world runs, how to be literate in the news, and how to combat misinformation, disinformation, and propaganda, among other things. To view source material used for this episode, you can visit the official blog post on the podcast website. To recommend an episode topic, you can DM me on the official podcast Facebook page, or you can email me at MackenzieAtkinson@thatspoliticspodcast.com. I'm your host, Mackenzie Atkinson, and I'll see you next time.